Well, welcome to this edition of the Toncast. I'm your host, Evan Arnold. Today we have as our guest, Robert... Hold on a second. It's Todd. Why don't you pronounce it for me? I don't want to get the pronunciation incorrect.
Oh, okay. Todd Robert Anderson is my full name.
Ah, just pick one.
Okay. Todd, then. Just Todd.
That's great. Okay, I think we're in for a day of ribaldry and puns. So tell me, what have you been frustrated by as a cinephile or as a parent lately when you've been going to the movie theaters? Tell me what's going on in your life, because you seem very angry.
I apologize if I'm coming off of angry.
No, I love angry.
Oh, you love...
My listeners generally prefer angry.
Oh, all right. I was, I guess, if you're talking about taking my family to the movies, I was a bit incensed when I saw Hugo.
Hugo, the Martin Scorsese movie.
The Scorsese
Did
picture.
Did you see it 3D or 2D?
I saw it in 3D.
Was it real D? Was it IMAX 3D?
No, it was... I don't know what system they use at the Arclight theaters in the Los Angeles area, but they're big, heavy, uncomfortable... glasses. Big, giant things.
Oh,
very
really?
Heavy.
Huh.
Very heavy.
It's interesting. If you see 3D movies in North Hollywood, mm-hmm. surprisingly, at the Valley 6, perhaps, they had very lightweight 3D glasses. When I saw Dolphin Tale, which you do not need to see in 3D.
I saw that film in 3D. It's
Did
not
you?
Necessary to see
yeah.
that film in
the
3D.
The upcharge was not worth it, in my opinion.
No.
My humble
the,
opinion.
The 3D...
Again, this is the Toncast. For anybody who's tuning in, we have Todd Robert Anderson with us.
Okay. There's a theater near me where I saw Dolphin Tale, which is the Arclight, the fancy ones.
Right.
The one up the street from me that's not fancy, they have those light glasses, which I prefer.
All right.
But I also saw Dolphin Tale.
That's fine. Let's take a break.
It wasn't necessarily...
Let's take a break and
we're taking
read
a
poem.
Break. We're reading a poem?
Yes. Let's read some children's poetry.
You don't want to hear what I was in... Okay.
Oh, I do, but we're just taking a break from that. We're going to go back to that.
All right. You want me to read... This is from Where the Sidewalk Ends by Shel Silverstein.
Well done.
And the poem you're having me read is called Invitation?
Yes.
Okay. If you are a dreamer, come in. If you are a dreamer, a wisher, a liar, a hoper, a prayer, a magic bean buyer, if you're a pretender, come sit by my fire, for we have some flax golden tales to spin. Come in. Come in.
Thank you for reading that. I'll let my listeners determine how well they thought you did, and please write in, and I appreciate all my listeners' responses, and we'll have a tally by the end of the year.
I didn't know there was a poem reading judgment thing on your show.
Oh, it's all about judgment. Speaking of judgment, what was your judgment about the propriety of the marketing of Hugo 3D?
I thought the marketing from Hugo was horribly misleading. It was marketed as a family film, even an adventure fantasy family film, which it is. It's none of those things. It's neither an adventure or a fantasy, and it's certainly not a family film.
But it's cast with two young leads, two minors.
Yeah, I think that if you have two children in the lead, mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily mean it's a family film. And even this movie, which is rated PG, right. so it's not inappropriate to watch mm-hmm. With children in the room, that still doesn't mean right. it's a family film. A family film, on some level, has to engage the children.
Right.
And Hugo is a drama.
Right.
It's a pure and simple drama. About a young boy reawakening a cranky old man's love of cinema, which is not something a child can relate to on any level, as far as I'm concerned. If your kids are all, if they're all currently in graduate film school, then yes, maybe you could consider it a family film. But it's not, and it was aggravating. And I'm not right. saying the movie was bad. I thought it was a little bit slow, and it's a little bit overrated as far as the critics are concerned. But it's certainly not a bad movie. The 3D was very nice, but again, and not a movie for children.
perhaps it could inspire them to go into USC's film school in criticism. I mean, we don't know where this is going to take them, how it's going to form their minds, and which folds.
I guess. I mean, older kids, sure. But anyone under the age of 12 is not going to be engaged by Hugo.
Now, did you also take your 6-year-old, who was probably zero then, for my analogy, working perfectly, and his or her 0-year-old friend to The Pianist? Because you thought it would just be about someone playing piano, and you were shocked that it was about something else?
No,
or was that movie marketed more appropriately?
No, I thought The Pianist was marketed very clearly as being a drama for adults, despite there being a child in the movie.
Right, so you don't read reviews ahead of time. You just see the trailer
and
go see the movie.
I will. I try not to read reviews before I go see a movie that I do really wanted to see, because I really wanted to see Hugo. I mean, it was actually an exciting idea, which was part of my disappointment, was the idea that Martin Scorsese, which is what they said, Martin Scorsese has made a movie for families. And that sounded awesome, because he's made some very exciting movies. And I thought, well, if he puts his, you know, stamp on a family film, that'd be very exciting. But I don't think it's
just stop that.
Okay.
Just stop that.
All right.
So right here we have another poem I want you to read. And it reminds me of Hugo. Please read this entire poem.
The whole thing?
Yes.
This is Oh, My Darling Clementine. In a cavern in a canyon, excavating for a mine, dwelt a miner, 49er, and his daughter, Clementine. Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling Clementine, you are lost and gone forever, dreadful sorry, Clementine. Like she was and like a fairy, and her shoes were number 9, herring boxes without topses. Sandals were for Clementine.
There's a little poetic license.
Yeah, a little bit.
Ogden Nashian.
Drove her ducklings to the water every morning just at 9, hit her foot against a splinter, fell into a foaming brine. Oh, that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Ruby lips above the water, blowing bubbles soft and fine. Alas for me, I was no swimmer, so I lost my Clementine. Well, so she got a splinter and drowned as a result? That's serious splinter. In a churchyard near the canyon where the myrtle doth entwine, there grow roses and other posies fertilized by Clementine. It's very dark. Then the miner 49er soon began to droop and pine, thought he ought to join his daughter. Now he's with his Clementine. In my dreams she still doth haunt me, robed in garments soaked in brine. Though in life I used to kiss her, now she's dead, I draw the line. Good for him. Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling Clementine, you were lost and gone forever. Dreadful sorry, Clementine. It's a very sad, poem.
And what do you think? Was this, is this poem mismarketed through the ages?
I don't know that it's mismarketed, but it certainly, makes for an odd, you know, lullaby.
Isn't it?
Yeah. A lot of lullabies are very dark.
That's what I'm learning. I'm learning life is very dark. And when I try to share things that I loved growing up with my children, I have children, I notice that there's a lot of darkness all over the place. And were you thinking as a father when you saw Hugo that this was too much darkness for my boy? Or were you just thinking he just didn't have enough backstory to fully appreciate this movie?
No, I thought he had an immense amount of backstory. Mm-hmm. A lot of the movie was backstory, maybe even too much backstory. I don't think the movie was too dark. My problem was the pacing and the subject matter, and the themes of the piece are not ones that a child could grasp onto, because I think you need more life experience to sort of understand the points the movie was attempting to make.
But every moment in life is an experience. I mean, he's experiencing, wow, look at Daddy flipping out. Daddy's getting really frustrated. Oh, look how Daddy deals with me getting bored in my seat. I mean, there's a life lesson there. It's just not the life lesson you wanted to teach that day.
Right. I see what you're saying, and it's certainly important. Life is not predictable. My main complaint is I could have been educated by the marketing campaign as to what the movie actually was. If it had been what they marketed, I would have been fine with it. Even if it wasn't great, I would have been okay with you know, the movie if it had been a fantasy adventure that sucked. At least, it, you know, I was getting a fantasy adventure.
Well, so what are the top three movies I should be taking my kids to see?
Right now?
Yeah.
Well, I thought The Muppets was a great movie for kids.
I thought it was hell.
You thought Muppets was hell?
Oh, that was so boring.
You thought Muppets was boring?
Oh, my gosh.
Did your child find it dull?
Loved it.
Well, then maybe they got it right. Because, I mean, The Muppets is for children.
He has no backstory. He hasn't seen The Muppet Show. He hasn't seen the first movie.
Oh,
he
didn't see. You're a purist.
I feel that it was bad. I feel that there was a fold in his brain that was created that shouldn't have happened. I feel that...
A fold in your child's brain?
Yeah.
A fold.
I feel
a brain fold.
Every time there's some experience... Before they're in second grade, I think by the time a kid is five, you know, they're pretty much 80% set for life, their personality and, mm-hmm. and how they view the world. But and then I think by second grade, they're 95% there. And I just feel it's a special time where we're ruining our children by what we choose to expose them to or not expose them to. I applaud you. I think you challenged your child. You didn't just give him some candy. I think you said, this is something you're going to have to question in your subconscious to get a handle on this piece of Hugo crap that you're so frustrated by. Uh-huh. Have you considered writing a letter to the studio or Scorsese about this?
I have not. I don't write a lot of letters.
So you're fine being one of the masses, and you just hope to once in a while get invited on somebody's Toncast and be able to spout off about this, hoping that someone's going to listen, and that's going to filter up.
That's how I communicate. That's how I communicate frustration on podcasts.
Terribly effective. The what else do you want to not actively change in life and community? What would you like to complain about here?
I'd like to...
Could you stop doing that, by the way?
What?
I know we're on radio. Oh, excuse me, web. It's radio in Thailand. But just stop doing that.
Just stop doing what?
Don't make me say what you're doing. Just
tell me what I'm doing so I can stop. I mean, I'll take notes.
It's really inappropriate.
What is it? What is it? I don't know what it is.
Let's see. I have another poem I'd like you to read right now.
A poem?
Yes. This one's called Warning. It's another Shel Silverstein.
All right. Warning. Inside everybody's nose there lives a sharp-toothed snail, so if you stick your finger in, he may bite off your nail. Stick it farther up inside, and he may bite your ring off. Stick it all the way, and he may bite the whole darn thing off. There it is.
All right. I have my own opinions on Todd Robert Anderson's rendition of that poem, but let me not push my opinions down your
throat.
What
are your opinions?
Please, dear listener, write in and tell me what you thought of his rendition. I'd appreciate that. So what else in society is bothering you these days? I know you're happy, a happy-go-lucky guy. You're usually smiling when I encounter you. But I can sense a darkness. I don't know if it's a black heart, a dark soul. I don't know how to put it best, but there's anger, there's vitriol. And I want to hear your thoughts. Because we can't mock them unless we've first heard them.
Oh, I see what you're saying. There's plenty of things that make me angry about society. Sure, I think that if you're not angry on some level about the way things work, then you're probably not paying attention. Or you're so rich that you don't want things to change.
Right. And so your entry point is whining about movies.
Well, no, you asked me pointedly about the movies, so that's where we started the interview. I don't think that's my entry point.
So you're just a brilliantly passive / polite person. You're a follower, is what you're saying.
I wouldn't call myself a follower, no.
Well, I could have sworn that in a recent Republican debate, Newt Gingrich was chastising one of the journalists, saying, "I don't want to answer that question." And you're framing this debate the wrong way. He asserted his will and said, "This is what we should talk about." Now, I think he's kind of gone in a weird direction. lately, which is great because I'm not a big fan personally. But my point is, why can't you be more like Newt Gingrich?
Well, first of all, there's the element of I haven't been married to anyone who's gotten cancer.
Right.
Knock on wood.
Right.
And I've also not left any woman who's gotten cancer who I was married to for another woman.
Right.
So I think that prevents me from... That lack of life experience
right.
keeps me from being the kind of leader that Newt Gingrich is. I'm not saying I don't have the capacity to be a great leader.
So you could leave someone.
I think I could lead, but I just feel like I'm not ready.
You're not you don't have the balls to say I'm done with you.
I don't think it's not about balls or courage. I assume that's what you mean by balls.
Yes.
It's about taking my time and learning enough. And getting enough life experience so I have the wisdom to properly lead.
Right. When's that going to happen?
It may not ever happen.
I mean, I'm looking in your eyes. Uh-huh. I'm looking under your eyes, and I'm saying that man has left his 30s. I'm saying you're not going to live forever. So when's enough enough?
I do not have an answer to that question. I don't
know. Well, how long do you think you're going to live?
I have no idea.
Are you long livers in your family? Do they tend to die young in your family?
There's a little bit of both.
Okay. Do you sacrifice your life and just hope your kid figures it out, or is it all for your grandkid?
Well, I would like my kid to have the best life that he can have.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
And his kids, it would be great if they had good lives.
Great. I hope there's a trust fund. I hope you win the lottery. In the meantime, what are you going to do to change this society that you're so angry at? You're going to keep learning and keep it
all
to yourself?
Well, and I try to do...
Because you're trying to be responsible, you passive little sheep?
In my own little way, I try to live my life according to my belief system of being good to other people and challenging other people and being challenged and continuing to grow.
Tell me about
and learn.
How you challenge people.
I'll get in debates with people mm-hmm. and that I may have a different set of beliefs that they do and I will get into a debate, friendly debate with them about that.
Now, why are you so scared to get into a fight? You seem obsessed with being friendly, polite, passive. Yeah, fisticuffs.
Well, I don't think that passive is not the right word, but I don't think fights solve things very often outside of actually... self-defense and keeping yourself from being killed by somebody who wants to fight you.
Read this poem.
I'm reading a poem. Okay. Jabberwocky.
Yeah, it's about a fight.
Twas brillig. Is that the word? Brillig?
Who cares? Just read it.
Twas brillig.
I'm so sick of your voice. Do a different voice.
All right. Twas brillig. And the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe. Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird, and shun the frumious Bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand.
Snatch.
Long time the Maxome foe he sought. So rested he by the tum-tum tree, and stood a while in thought. And as in uffish thought he stood, the Jabberwock with eyes of flame came whiffling through the tulgey wood, and burbled as it came. 1-2, 1-2, and through, the vorpal blade went snicker-snack. He left it dead, and with its head he went galumphing back. And hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy. O frabjous day, Callooh Callay, he chortled in his joy. 'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe. I feel a lot of these words are just made up.
Well, all right. That's
your opinion. I've never heard many of those words before.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for having me read poems.
Oh my gosh. I'm just trying to figure out how much time we have left. Oh my god. I'm gonna keep talking to you. So, what's one thing in your life you're proud of? Have you accomplished anything? Todd Robert Anderson. Again, we're at the Toncast. I'm your host, Evan Arnold. Thanks if you're just tuning in. We have a somewhat angry Todd Robert Anderson.
Up to this point, I have not exemplified anger on any level. On any level, I haven't been angry at all so far. You are pushing me into a realm of anger. That's what you're doing right now.
All right, I'm rubber, you're glue. So what do you think is something positive you've accomplished in your life thus far? Or are you still, seeping and steeping and getting ready for your breakout move?
I've done a lot of things that I'm very proud of. There's, of course, my son. I'm proud of him. He's a nice boy.
Not
he's smart.
Okay.
Not using a condom, is that what you say? Well, we pointedly tried to have a baby. We weren't using a condom because we were trying to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, people can choose to have a baby. That's still right. Okay, right?
I commend you for not having too many. I think a lot of people have too many babies, which I view as just, other creatures who spew fecal matter from their rear ends and just pollute the environment. I guess I should applaud you, relatively speaking, for you being one of two people who had one child. And so you're not adding to the population problem, or do you have two children?
I only have one child.
Okay. That's the first thing I applaud about you.
Oh,
since
thanks.
I've gotten to know you today.
Thanks.
But do you think your child is going to probably end up having multiple children because he's going to feel it's his responsibility, or he's going to grow up and think, wow, I didn't have a sister or brother. I'm not sure I want to do that to my children. And then he's going to go overboard and have three or four children and add to this exponential population problem we have.
That's possible.
That's possible.
I hope he doesn't have children as a way of getting revenge on a shortcoming of his parents. But that's his choice.
No,
there's also the possibility.
I wasn't saying it was a shortcoming. It's a choice. I just want to know if you're inculcating in him a sense of responsibility and making it clear that it was your choice, it was your conscious choice, and it's the right choice, and he should not have four children.
I am not placing that kind of
burden
on him. I am not indoctrinating him into a single child family world. He can make those choices. I imagine that he will grow up and think for himself, and he can make the choices that he feels are right for both himself and the world at large.
Okay, so if he's going to grow up and make his own choices and exercise this BS concept of free will, why...
How is it a BS concept?
God, I thought I was asking the questions here.
I apologize.
Welcome to the Toncast. This is a place where Evan Arnold asks the questions and some angry interviewees interrupt.
I don't know why you keep insisting.
Well, I don't understand why
angry.
You're not doing more with your life, since clearly you're not going to make your son do anything. You're saying I'm giving you a gift of running pell-mell through the streets, young boy. I'm going to take you to inappropriate movies, and then you can choose what you want to do.
Hugo, first of all,
in the meantime, I'm going to wait till I'm 80. And I feel confident that I've learned enough things about life, maybe, and then I'll do something.
I never said Hugo was inappropriate. I very pointedly said it was perfectly appropriate to watch with children. I'm just saying it's not a movie that children could possibly enjoy. That's all I said about Hugo. Okay? And you are insisting that I'm angry, and it seems like you want me to be angry, and I'm willing to oblige that, if that's what you want.
I do want you to be angry. I'm an angry person.
You seem very wound up.
I have antipathy. I have enmity. I'm frustrated. My life is not going well.
Why not?
You don't ask the questions here. This is my show.
All right. I don't know where you're coming from.
Okay, what brings you joy? Let's talk about your joy.
A lot of things bring me joy.
Don't say your son again. That is such a hackneyed answer.
All right, I won't say my son.
Outside of your family and your beautiful wife that brings you joy.
I still enjoy acting when I'm actually doing it. When I act, when I get to act.
Yeah, wasn't it good when I forced you, when I pressured you to do another voice? That was beautiful.
Yeah, that was so much fun. It was so much fun. It brought me an immense amount of joy.
What other voice
Reading
would you like
Jabberwocky.
To do?
I'm not really a voice guy.
Oh, so you think acting is modeling?
No. I don't do...
Commercials? Well, you do commercials.
I do, but I don't
do... You're a hacker. You sit there and you look pretty. You say, I have red hair. Do you want to go ginger today? It's modeling. That's all it is. If you don't do voices, what is it?
Well, I mean, you can play a character without doing a silly voice. You can have a voice similar to your own, but you're still a completely different person.
But everybody's going to know it's you. Blind people
will
know
it's you. Well, there's no way of not... Is that what acting's about? Fooling blind people?
I don't know. I've never interviewed Gary Oldman, but I figure that's one of his goals.
To fool blind people?
I bet he'd be a wonderful guest.
Yeah, I'll bet a lot of blind people thought he was actually a midget in that movie he made about the midget. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Oh. Well, maybe you should do more research before you do these interviews, huh, pal?
I'm not really a cinephile. I'll research if I ever get Gary Oldman as my guest. But in the meantime, I just like to hear stories about Bram Stoker. He has a little book he goes to, I hear. It's in Moleskine, where he'll flip through it and he'll say, okay, there's that picture. I'm ready to go. No matter how drunk he is, or if he's vomiting into his heroin bucket, he's got
Oldman's got a heroin problem?
I don't know any of these things, but I enjoy the mythology. I don't want to do the research because that could ruin the mythology for me.
But it's not myth. I mean, I guess you could call it mythology, but you're sort of creating the launching pad of this Gary Oldman mythology because I've never heard any of those things before.
I've heard these things before, and I...
Where have you heard that Gary Oldman has a heroin puke
around,
bucket?
Around. But what? I don't want to verify this. That's not as fun. I've heard a lot of crazy stuff about Nicolas Cage. I don't want to know what's true and what's not true. Although a friend of mine swears to me that stuff you read in Star Magazine, 95% of it, actually true.
Who said? Who's your friend?
I can't. Old high school friend, but I can't. He's in a big power position. I can't rat him out. The point is, what are you doing to create mythology around yourself? Because as an actor, it sounds like, oh, I want to do good work. And if I just keep my head down, nose to the grindstone, people are going to just see I'm quality. And they're gonna recognize the good work. But what are you doing to like get in trouble with the law so other people say, oh, he exists. Let's give him a job.
I have not gone out of my way to get in trouble with the law to further my career thus far.
And where is your life?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Shia LaBeouf has been in more trouble with the law than maybe the Duke brothers were. So maybe I should do more of the Shia LaBeouf thing. Maybe because he got
Megan Fox.
I don't know if he banged Megan Fox. I don't know anything.
I don't
about
know
that.
Either, and I don't want to know. It's not true.
Okay.
But again, that's a situation where I heard something, and I like the story.
All right, that's great. I mean, but I know for a fact that Shia LaBeouf has been in trouble, you know, for crashing his car while under the influence. I know that he's been in several bar fights and gotten arrested as a result of that. I know that he got a $600 ticket or something like that for smoking in public in Burbank, which you're not allowed to do in Burbank, California. Which is sort of a little bit fascist, but I understand that smoking is bad for people.
We don't know if he was given a warning or not, do we?
I'm pretty sure they gave him the ticket, but my memory is cloudy there.
But a la Alec Baldwin, they might have, you know, said, tried to make an example out of the celebrity.
That's true. Are you talking about Alec Baldwin on the airplane playing his game on the airplane?
Before we possibly go into the Words with Friends episode and all that, could you say Shia's last name a few times in a row for me?
LaBeouf? LaBeouf? LaBeouf. LaBeouf.
Okay, now...
LaBeouf. LaBeouf.
Do you know how to pronounce it?
No.
I don't either. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just wanted to hear how you did.
I think it's Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean...
Not LaBeouf?
I don't think it's LaBeouf or LaBeouf.
What, maybe it's LaBeouf.
Maybe it is LaBeouf.
Kind of like Chateau Neuf de Pop.
Yeah, maybe. You know, it's not... Shia LaBeouf. LaBeouf.
Did you watch him in Project Greenlight?
I did not see the Project Greenlight film that he was in, no.
Oh, there was a whole TV series that led to some film.
I never watched that TV series. Project Greenlight I've seen is I saw the finished product of the third season, which was the horror movie Feast by John Gulager. That's the only Project Greenlight anything that I've seen.
All right. When did you first become obsessed with Shia LaBeouf?
I'm not obsessed with Shia LaBeouf.
Who are you obsessed by?
I am not obsessed by any celebrities currently.
Who were you obsessed by?
When I was a kid, I was pretty obsessed with Steve Martin.
Yeah?
I watched a lot of Steve Martin. I wouldn't say it was an unhealthy obsession. It was just I was very enamored of his work.
Did you read Cruel Shoes?
I did read Cruel Shoes.
Did you see The Jerk and Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid?
I saw all those films.
Did you like the early banjo stuff, or did you think it was a distraction, or it added to?
When he started doing banjo during his stand-up act?
Yeah, there.
I didn't feel it was a distraction. I thought it was a nice respite from the comedy. But he also employed the banjo in many funny routines as well. So it was nice to hear him play. It was like a break from the comedy. He would give you a little banjo.
So pretty much Steve Martin was your idol?
Yeah, when I was a kid, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Listeners, usually I like to have you write in or email or text me, except you know who you are, and ask for your opinions. But in this example, in this particular circumstance, I'd like to say, Todd Robert Anderson, I applaud you.
Oh, thank you.
When he kicked Iron Balls McGinty.
In The Jerk.
In The Jerk.
And hurt his foot, yes.
What did you think about how that affected his relationship with his dog, Shithead?
I don't think it had any real impact on his relationship with his dog, Shithead, in that movie.
All right. Good answer. What is your favorite Steve Martin movie?
Of all time, my favorite Steve Martin movie is it's probably a tie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tie between Roxanne and L.A. Story.
Mm. And what about his waiter routine?
Oh, the absent-minded waiter. That's one of my favorite all-time sketches, actually. I loved that sketch. Yes.
So when did you outgrow your passionate devotion to Steve Martin?
Father of the Bride.
Really?
Killed it. I mean, it didn't kill it. It was concerning, but then pretty much every movie he made after that was of that level of mediocrity because that was his highest-grossing movie to date. So he started making similar pictures. And then we got this slight resurgence of the old Steve Martin with Bowfinger, which was at the end of the 90s, I think, which was exciting because he was funny in that, hilarious, and Eddie Murphy was hilarious in that. So I thought this
what about
marks...
Jeff Goldblum?
Jeff Goldblum was...
I don't even know if he
not
was
in Bowfinger.
No, I just like him.
I do like Jeff Goldblum.
And you're right, he is an example of someone who does not really change his voice or his accent for any part. And
not really.
Pretty much reads every role the same.
A lot of people do. I mean, you take your George Clooney, you take your...
So you're more interested perhaps in being a celebrity than
No, that's not true. That's not true. I can do accents, but I'm not going to do one for you right now, and I'm about to explain why. I don't do accents unless I have enough time to prepare, and part of what I have to do to prepare is I have to have somebody who actually has the accent read all my lines into a tape recorder or some kind of recording device so I can memorize my lines with the actual sounds, because I do not have the kind of ear where I can look at something on the page and turn it into an accent.
Right.
And honestly, I don't think that many people do. I think a lot of the accents that you hear that are supposed to be British or Southern are rather generalized, and they're not specific to the actual region where the character's from, and they sound phony. I mean, and I think that's true about American accents. You hear a lot of British actors who are revered, I think, and a lot of Australian actors who are revered. But if you really listen, their American accents are faulty and don't sound real.
So you're furious at other redheads like Damian Lewis, for example, these Brits who come over and take our American jobs?
I'm not furious at them, no.
Why not?
No, I was merely...
You want to give more of our jobs away? Because that's what they keep doing. They keep hiring Australians and Brits to come over here with their faulty accents and be the leads in our series because they have experience in their country, but
I see your anger, and I appreciate it, and I think if somebody's good and right for the part, then I don't care where they're from. Okay. I would say that there's...
Did they even read you for Band of Brothers?
I did have an audition for that. Wow. It was one of the worst auditions I've ever had.
Let's hear about it.
Here's the thing. It was, they had me playing a soldier, but they had me, and it wasn't a big part, it was a small part, but it was basically a death scene. The whole scene was like a guy who was dying. And to do a death scene in an audition room on a folding metal chair is it's very awkward and difficult. And I had a hard time, and I went up on my lines, and I had to do it again, and it was just bad. It was just bad. and it's interesting because I've had in my career, I've only done that a couple times where I've had an audition that was I had another one for, I think, Pearl Harbor or some, I can't remember which Michael Bay film it was, but it was another thing where the only scene the character was in was basically he was dying. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not the casting director's fault. They need to cast it, and the only, you know, text they have is a guy dying. But it's very hard to do a convincing death scene in a chair in somebody's office. It's hard.
I never auditioned for Pearl Harbor. I wonder if it's because I never fooled around with Lisa Fields. Did you fool around with Lisa Fields?
I did not fool around with Lisa Fields.
But you know who I'm talking about.
Yes, I've auditioned for Lisa Fields. Did she cast Pearl Harbor? Maybe it wasn't Pearl Harbor. It was something else.
No, I just thought she had some relationship with Michael Bay. I'm not saying
she does. She does, but she does more of. Doesn't she cast more of the horror movies that he produces?
I don't care.
I don't know. Maybe she did Pearl Harbor. I don't know. I might be speaking out of turn. I could have the wrong movie. My only point was it was a death scene, and doing a death scene in an office situation is difficult for me. I'm sure other actors are much better at it.
Do you like horror scenes more than comedies?
Horror movies or scenes, like auditioning? I honestly haven't auditioned for a lot of horror scenes, but I did audition for John Gulager's Project Greenlight film, Feast. And
you say his last name a couple times?
Gulager.
One more.
Gulager. I did audition for his movie Feast, and I had to play Fear in an office situation, which is also awkward. But in that instance, I thought I did a decent enough job.
Was that the movie that also had one of George Clooney's exes in it?
Maybe.
Krista Allen?
I don't know.
What do you think?
Balthazar Getty was in it. He's the guy who got my part.
Oh, he's rich.
Yeah, well, he needed the money.
I think his kid went to Exploring Minds Montessori, not far from here. Oh. But what do you think it might be like to make love with George Clooney?
I have no idea.
I'm sorry. Try to use your actor's imagination and guess.
I'm sure he would be surprisingly gentle and sweet and giving. Why am I creeping you out? You told me to imagine it. Should I say he was more? He's like into the hard thrusting.
Imagine it. Just don't talk about it.
But this is an interview.
Yeah. Just.
What am I reading? I'm reading this. This is a huge poem.
Read it quickly. Read it as quickly as you can.
Sick. I cannot go to school today, said little Peggy Ann McKay. I have the measles and the mumps, the gash, a rash, and purple bumps. My mouth is wet. My throat is dry. I'm going blind in my right eye. My tonsils are as big as rocks. I've counted 16 chicken pox, and there's one more. That's 17. And don't you think my face looks green? My leg is cut. My eyes are blue. It might be instamatic flu. I cough and sneeze and gasp and choke. I'm sure that my left leg is broke. My hip hurts when I move my chin, my belly button's caving in, my back is wrenched, my ankle sprained, my appendix pains each time it rains, my nose is cold, my toes are numb, I have a silk sliver in my thumb, my neck is stiff, my voice is weak, I hardly whisper when I speak, my tongue is filling up, my mouth, I think my hair is falling out, my elbow's bent, my spine ain't straight, my temperature is 108, my brain is shrunk, I cannot hear, there is a hole inside my ear, I have a hangnail in my heart, is what? What's that? What's that you say? You say today is Saturday, goodbye, I'm going out to play.
Very good, very fast.
Yeah.
Very fast. Speaking of making love with George Clooney and reading that poem at that speed, are you a fast lovemaker or a slow lovemaker, or kind
of out of politeness to my partner, I try to get it done as quickly as possible.
That's sweet. How many men and women have you been with?
I'm not sure of the number of women. I haven't been with any men thus far.
I'm sorry, how many people have you been with?
I don't know. Maybe 17.
How many of them do you think you've satisfactorily pleasured?
4.
You have a similar issue my son does. He's not good with estimation. He likes specific numbers. He likes to count it and know. And yeah, I thought I was phrasing the 17, question for an approximate.
The 17 number was approximate, but four, I remember satisfying 4 people. I mean, I can make it approximate if you'd rather. Approximately 5 people have been satisfied by me, but it is specifically 4.
I like that.
Okay.
Thank you. Do you think Kurosawa was a hack?
No.
Do you think he's overrated?
No.
Do you think he's Taiwanese?
No. No.
You say it like you know he's not.
No.
Is he still alive?
No.
Is blue red?
Is blue red?
Yeah.
No.
Am I sitting on your roof?
No.
Am I wearing boots?
No.
Ah, listeners, he fell into the trap. I love it.
What's the trap?
Well, I have a little section on the show where I like to get guests to say no. And there's kind of an overtone. It's a choral overtone that happens when you throw out a lot of no's into the air. And I love it. It's my thing.
Okay.
Do you have a thing that's inexplicably your thing?
No.
You are a good sport, sir. Wow. If we could pay people, I'd consider paying you. I was reading another one of these poems here I have in front of me, Little Bo Peep. And, you know, so often we don't pay attention to the later stanzas of a lot of these poems and realize how dark they are.
Uh-huh.
And I want to thank you and applaud you once for reading some poetry with me today.
Oh, thanks.
I don't know. You've probably been invited, because you're a wonderful guest. You put up with a lot, onto a lot of people's podcasts, maybe mm-hmm. some other people's Toncasts. And I don't know how often these other hack hosts ask their guests to help them promote literacy on our internet waves,
mm-hmm.
on the interwebs. And I want to thank you for being part of my literacy project.
I didn't know this was a literacy project, but I'm happy to be a part of any literacy project.
Well, we get some of our funding any which way. Other shows are sponsored by other organizations that I don't want to talk about on this particular
episode.
Are
you saying you get your funding from a literacy project? Or that you're helping a literacy project? I'm confused.
Well, I don't know if I should get into it. I don't want to get in trouble. You seem like a kind of scared, lily-livered person. You understand how to, like, not get in trouble, not do too much, not say too much. Let's talk more, again, about what you are going to do when there's an Occupy North Hills that you lead, when you make a move into the political, when you feel you have garnered enough power and mm-hmm. success and knowledge, and you're ready to break out and enter the political fray.
I don't know that I'll ever become a politician, but certainly if I had lots of money and power, I would focus my giving and attention and volunteer time on education.
What kind of education?
All the formative years of education, elementary school and high school. And also at this point, I guess, making college more affordable for everybody. But I feel that our society, the world society in general.
Oh my God, I'm so fucking bored.
Okay, keep going.
We do not put enough emphasis on education.
Oh, geez.
It's important to everybody, but nobody's really willing to pay for it. So I'm sorry. You asked the question. I was just trying to answer it honestly. I apologize if I bore you.
It's just that some people aren't operating on a shoestring. I mean, I have modest facilities here, and I don't really have time to edit the show down always. So you can't just be boring for a whole stretch of time and assume that I'm just going to edit out the boring parts and keep your pithy little aphorisms and your punctuated moments of brilliance. You need to be on. Now, it's a little more forgiving. You see me kind of wandering, and I...
So, was I supposed to give you a funny answer to that? Like, what I would do as a politician?
A good answer. Yeah, I mean, funny is...
All right, let me try again, okay? Mm-hmm. I would focus all my attention as a powerful politician on taking over the Republican Party. And running the Republican Party. Is that better?
It's disingenuous because you've already
told me. You wanted me to be Newt Gingrich.
No, you said you don't want to be a politician, so I don't even know why you're pretending it. Well, and you're not even using a voice. You're not even using a different voice, so I don't believe it.
Why do I have to use a different voice?
Because that's good acting.
No, it's not, necessarily.
All right. So what can our listeners appreciate if you don't do a different voice? Can they see your facial tics right now?
No.
So shouldn't good acting be able to transport itself through any medium?
I suppose, but I thought this was just an interview. I didn't realize I was acting.
Well, you're not, clearly. You're modeling. You're sitting here and I'm looking given, at your face.
If you had given me some sort
of
script.
But they're hearing your voice. Oh my gosh. You think Alan Alda needs a script if a director says, do a little speech right now? He can come up with a beginning and a middle and an end. Because he's a bright guy, he thinks about the character, and he can go. He can extemporize.
But this, you invited me to your podcast to interview me, and at no point did you suggest that there was a character you wanted me to play. If you had said that, like this director said to Alan Alda, I might have come up with a speech
for
it.
What do you bring to the table?
I just bring myself to the table. It's an
and
interview.
What is that? What is Todd Robert Anderson? I'm like pulling teeth. I'm trying to extract. What the fuck is Todd Robert Anderson? He's a guy who whines about movies, is not ready to challenge Newt Gingrich and be a politician. He thinks my darling Clementine is weird, that she got a splinter. You're a guy who whines.
She got a
That's
splinter and drowned. It's a very sad song. That's all I was saying. And if you get a splinter and that causes you to drown, that's kind of strange.
She was wearing like wooden shoes or something. She hit her foot and she tripped. And because that reminds me. I wanted to know is your son pool safe?
He is still learning to swim. So no.
Is he going to the Water Whisperer or Jim Herrick Swim School or
in the spring he is going to go to? We were going to the Y, and it was ineffective as far as
but cheap.
But we're going to put him this spring in a as you say a Water Whisperer type of situation. So we're told that after 4 weeks with this woman that your kid will be able to swim.
Okay, well, I wouldn't know. I haven't gone there. But now, why did you think the Y was ineffective? Is it a racist thing?
What? No, it's not racist. It's just it didn't... there wasn't enough focus on each child because the classes are rather big for swim lesson classes.
Big, including a lot of different types of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That wasn't my problem. I mean, it was fine.
Sure?
The Y was fine. It just the reason why I say it's ineffective
right.
is my son was going to swim lessons for 6 months there,
right.
and he's still not a strong enough swimmer. So therefore, the program's ineffective.
Hmm.
Make sense?
Sure. Yeah, it makes a certain
for
kind of
my
sense.
Son. I'm sure it's very effective for other people. Different people take to the water in different ways.
Yeah, this is one of the limits of doing a podcast. They just don't see your face. They're not getting what I'm getting.
What are you getting?
Well, I'm just saying if perchance you were smirking or there was a little glint in your eye when you were talking about something, our listeners, our then viewers, would get something extra. I'm just really frustrated about this medium, and it's my own choice. It's baggage that I'm bringing with me here today, and I guess I should apologize for it, but I just don't feel like it. So do you think your son's ever going to be a swimmer?
I do. I believe he will be a swimmer. He does love the water, and he's very good at swimming.
And you're making it a priority?
With Noodles and whatnot. He just needs to develop the strength to keep himself above the water.
Is Noodles a friend of his, or is that your pet?
It's neither of those things. A noodle is a styrofoam thing that you that floats, and you can use it to keep yourself above water when you're learning to swim.
Would you approve if he had made a friend when he went to the Y, and that friend he brought home was named Noodles?
Would I approve of him having a friend named Noodles?
Of any race?
Yes.
Do you believe in races?
Do I believe in races?
Yeah. Or are you more of a, hey, I'm curious about your ethnicity? Or do you say, hey, what's your background? When you see, like, some hot mixed chick.
I am always curious about people's histories, family histories, where they come from.
So that's how you diplomatize.
Regardless of their gender or attractiveness. I think it's unavoidable to... you can't help but deal with races, I guess, but I'm not a huge fan of calling them races, mm-hmm. and I'm not a huge fan of separating people according to their color and backgrounds. I'm not a huge fan of that.
You would never want to have to do that?
I don't.
Who should do that?
Perhaps nobody.
Huh.
We should all just stop doing that.
Maybe we should all just get along.
Why not?
What are your darker attributes? What are your personal bigotries?
I don't have any bigotry
mm-hmm.
in my system.
No?
I do not.
You're pure love, fully accepting? I noticed you married a white chick.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
I did.
Had you sampled? A lot of different ladies.
I didn't, mm. and it wasn't for lack of trying.
And do you think that was really free will, or do you think that's something your parents kind of put on you?
I think that my wife and I meeting and getting married was a combination of fate and free will.
Really?
Yeah.
Think it was quasi ordained?
Well, I mean, according to the choices I made, and mm-hmm. according to the choices she made, we mm-hmm. wound up meeting. Mm-hmm. And we really got along, and it wasn't, I never thought for a second, well, thank goodness she's a white girl, and never thought that.
Did you ever think, thank goodness, about certain other things, certain other aspects?
Of my marriage? Yes, I do. I do say thank goodness quite a bit.
That's good. I don't want to ask any questions which are too personal in that realm, though. But let's say with other women you had dated before, what were some of your biggest life learning experiences / regrets?
With the women that I dated before. In college, I was sort of a serial monogamist.
So you missed out on a lot of action because...
No. I would basically find another girlfriend mm-hmm. to take the place of the girlfriend I was dating before I broke up with the other girlfriend.
Right.
And that was awful of me and
what
wrong.
A dick.
I was being a dick. It's true.
How many times were you a dick?
Several times in college, yeah.
What would you estimate?
I don't know. Maybe six times.
What if you took a little more time and counted it?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 times.
Wow. In this case, it was a really good estimation.
Yeah, it was right on.
I'm working on that with my son. He really just wants to count. He's not...
Why do you want your son to estimate versus actually...
The teachers brought it up with me yesterday. They just said he doesn't like to estimate. Now, I understand he's one of the younger kids in the class, but still... It's not a fine motor skill.
Okay.
It's a developmental issue. What are your biggest childhood and developmental deficits that you pray to God your son does not inherit?
When I was a kid, I was very shy mm-hmm. and quiet mm-hmm. And a bully magnet. And I hope he doesn't inherit any of those, whatever those things were. Mm-hmm. As an adult, I've developed a chronic pain. Chronic headache, and I hope he doesn't have that.
Is that from being mercilessly pummeled as a child?
I have no idea.
But you think you suffered concussions?
I did suffer a concussion when I was a kid.
Jeez, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
That's effed up.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about what you would do to another kid or another kid's parents if that happened to your kid?
Well, I didn't suffer the concussion as a result of a beating. But if I found out that my son was being bullied, I would have a serious problem with
it. What, flag football? Where'd you get your concussion?
Playing volleyball in a school gymnasium.
That's ridiculous. That's pathetic. Well, at least you didn't say badminton.
All right.
All right. Well, boo-hoo, sorry for you and your migraines. But what would you do? Would you stab another kid's parent, and under what circumstances? And under what circumstances could you go dark enough to destroy another child?
I would never stab a child or a child's parent unless the child and his or her parent were currently trying to stab me as well.
So you would stab a minor?
No.
Under the right circumstances,
well, if
you would
he was,
stab
if,
a minor.
If a minor was trying to kill me and I couldn't overpower him, I would imagine a minor I could probably overpower and just prevent from killing me without killing the child. And that would be, you know, my first instinct, I think. But if the child, say, was coming at me and with a machine gun and firing, you know.
You don't watch Dexter? You don't have a dark passenger?
I don't have a dark passenger. No, I'm not a serial killer. So that's what Dexter is. He's a serial killer. His dark passenger is his serial killer side.
But you don't have dark fantasies of things you'd like to do to get back at people or society for all the pummeling you withstood as a child?
I do not.
Are you dealing with all of your issues, all of your many issues, in such a healthy fashion because you took the Lord into your heart, or because you do yoga? Or what? Tell me more about your quotidian rituals, your morning ablutions, your routines that make you such a positive, perfect person.
I don't do yoga, and I don't go to church. I just live my life according to certain, I guess, ethical standards. Where I treat other people with respect up front, and I try to be good to them, and that seems to work.
Work for who? It works for you?
Certainly, yeah.
Are you happy with your life?
Elements of it, sure.
Elements of it.
Yeah,
what
why not?
What percentage?
I'd say 50%.
50%?
Yeah.
So how much do you think is possible? Do you think that other 50% is potential? You can get to 100, or how much can...
Well, we all strive to get to 100% happy, but how many people ever actually really reach that? It's probably impossible.
Well,
life is not necessarily a happy, happy thing. You just find happiness in its trials and tribulations.
Do you think 50% is where about where you can max out, or you think you...
No, I think I could do better, but I think there's certain things that are out of my control. And if the cards are dealt, I could take a good hand of cards and make something good out of it, but those cards have to be dealt to me first.
Right. So you do seem to be a passive person who has just been beaten down, literally, by kids you grew up with and society. Mm-hmm. And you sit and wait. You do a lot of work. You do a lot of preparation.
Uh-huh.
But you don't do the... whatever comes out of after preparation, I guess that would be paration.
Paration?
And you don't just you change. Why don't you mark the cards? Why don't you create a new game?
Well, I'm not really a cheater. And the cards are a metaphor for the fact that we as human beings don't have all that much control. You only can deal with the cards you're dealt. You make the best of what's around, and I certainly feel I do that. I don't wait around.
That's a hack analogy, don't you think?
I do.
I'm so bored with this line of dialogue.
All right.
Could you read this?
The toucan?
Why not?
Do you have any direction you want me to do a voice?
You know I want you to do a voice, but I don't know if you
just give me a voice you want me to read it in.
I want you to do a different voice.
A different voice?
A different voice.
Nick Toucan, Tell me who can catch a toucan. Lucan. Just how few can ride the toucan. Toucan. What kind of goo can stick you to the toucan? Glucan. Who can write some more about the toucan you can?
So how many milliseconds into that voice did you think, oh, I shouldn't have chosen that?
That's an interesting question, because it's my first reaction was, what am I doing? My second was, I sound a little bit like what's-his-face, who played Quasimodo in those old movies. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, this is kind of fun. But apparently it was only fun for me.
No, I found that highly entertaining. Speaking of the voices you don't do, who are some of your favorite actors to listen to? Peter Lorre, Christopher Walken. I mean, who stands out for you? Who's just...
To Jimmy, listen to?
Jimmy Stewart, yeah.
Vocally, just yeah. Listen to?
You never think about that. For you, it's all about the face. And the
well, there's muscle. More... Yeah, it's part of it. I mean, I do enjoy listening to Christopher Walken, I suppose. He's got a fun cadence. But I like Jeff Bridges' voice. I think Jeff it's very, Bridges. Very pleasant voice. Mm-hmm. Kevin Spacey's voice is nice, you know?
It's very weird how you said it. If people could see your body posture as you said that, it was... I just would not have guessed you were happily married. So, now, Heavy Metal is a movie you like. That had a dirty animation in it, correct?
It does.
Do you like, what's it called? Not anime, but hentai
bukkake? Oh, the like Japanese porno animation?
Yes.
I'm not a huge fan, no.
No? Which type of porn animation do you like? Just not Japanese?
I'm not really into pornographic animation.
Oh.
I did enjoy Fritz the Cat, which got an X rating, but it's really not all that pornographic.
Now, there was some movie, maybe it was Heavy Metal, maybe it was Fritz the Cat. I have this memory as a too young, impressionable child seeing a bunch of penis ball combos going into a woman until she exploded. Was that one of those
penis,
movies?
Penis, not that I'm aware of. No, I don't remember that from all either right. of those films.
Do you think there should be more adult animation, or like you're complaining incessantly about Hugo, do you get frustrated
with
South Park and all these shows and The Simpsons where, oh, but it looked on the surface like it was for kids, but I can't believe if I had done some flipping research or had read a review. I mean, I can't believe I have to deign to read a review. If I had done something,
First of all, I have not complained incessantly about Hugo. We talked about it briefly at the beginning of the interview.
On the show?
Yeah, on the show. And I don't spend all my time complaining about Hugo. But I will say this, in my own defense, a lot of the critics that you're talking about... Mm-hmm. call it just what the marketing people call it, which is not correct. It is not, they say it's a whimsical thing, and Martin Scorsese has made a family film, but it is not a family film. That's all I said. The critics are saying it too, so you can do your research, but unless you listen to me, you're not getting the truth about Hugo.
What's a properly marketed film?
A properly marketed film?
Yeah.
I thought they did a great job in the 80s of marketing the film The Ice Pirates.
Tell me about The Ice Pirates.
The Ice Pirates is a movie, is a space spoof, and it's about these guys who live in a galaxy where there's no water, or very little, mm-hmm. and all the rich people control the water. They freeze it in giant ice cubes.
Reminds me of Justin Timberlake's movie, In Time. But anyway, continue.
I did not see In Time. But,
I didn't see it either.
But that's...
The rich people control something that everybody needs.
Yes.
Sounds like a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Sounds
well, like it's a recurring theme mm-hmm. in our existence.
Could you say space spoof again a few times?
Space spoof. Space spoof. Space spoof. Space spoof.
Now say it 6 times as fast as you can.
Space spoof, space spoof, space spoof. That's all I can do.
Now say rubber baby buggy bumpers.
Rubber baby buggy bumpers.
Now do the whole, she sells seashells by the seashore.
She sells seashells by the seashore.
Say toy boat 10 times in a row.
Toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat. That's all. I can only do 5.
That's great.
Thank you.
Of Great.
Thank you.
You got any other tongue twisters you like?
No.
Do you know anything from the Rime of the Ancient Mariner?
Nope.
All right. Any old Chaucer?
Not off the top of my head, no.
All right. Would you like to learn some?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Good. Have you ever gone back to school?
I have not gone back to school.
So you're a novelist. Now you wrote a bunch of screenplays, but now you're attempting to write a novel?
I wrote one novel.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, I wrote it.
Have you ever woken up in the middle of the night wanting to revisit one of the chapters, thinking, I blew it?
No, but it's been a while since I looked at that novel that I wrote, and I'm sure if I went back, there'd be plenty of things I wanted to change.
How long ago was that?
That I wrote it?
Yeah.
I guess I finished it a couple of years ago.
Yeah?
Yeah.
When are you doing your next one?
I wrote the first draft of a new novel.
Yes?
I finished it in October.
So you've written a second novel. How many drafts do you have to write for it to be complete?
Well, I mean, it usually I have to, you know, rewrite several times before it gets to a place where I think it will read well.
Is it self-referential bullshit? What's it about?
My new novel, I mean, well, self-referential bullshit. I did write a book which was self-referential bullshit about my career in acting. That's not a novel.
No,
The novel, I wrote a horror novel.
Cool.
And the new novel that I'm writing is also a horror novel.
So you are fascinated by the horror genre more than other genres currently.
Well, I grew up reading horror novels.
Yeah.
Because I was too scared to watch the movies, so I'd read the books.
Mm-hmm.
So I think because of that...
Mostly Stephen King. Who'd you read?
I read everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, Stephen King certainly was, you know, one of the first guys I read, but, you know, that was sort of a launching pad into other popular writers at the time, but more importantly, I think it, you know, it got me into reading Lovecraft and Poe and classics.
Do you ever read sci-fi fantasy stuff?
I do and I have, but I don't gravitate towards the sci-fi fantasy stuff.
They're gonna make this Orson Scott Card story into a movie purportedly, and some people are seemingly upset because they don't like his politics. And,
what are his politics?
I think he gave a lot of money to Prop 8 or something like that, or maybe he's a Mormon or something. I don't know.
Okay.
Some people have some issue. And I was thinking, well, you know, Wagner didn't like the Jews, but does that mean, you know, all his music should be destroyed, or his music shouldn't have or couldn't have gotten out there? What do you think about this?
Which book of his are they making into a movie?
What's it called? Ender's...
Ender's Game? Yeah, that's a great story. Regardless, I really don't know what the hell his politics are, but that is a great story. I would say that's a massive undertaking to try and create a film that isn't terrible out of that book. It's going to be very hard to do that. And I know that in the past it's constantly almost being produced and then it gets stopped at the last moment. It's very hard to, it will be very hard to find the boy to play Ender. That's a hard role for a seasoned actor to play. Never mind a kid.
But what do you think about, someone having highly offensive politics and their art being disseminated?
That's a good question. I think that certainly in the case of Ender's Game, it is a great story, regardless of his politics. If he'd given a lot of money for Prop 8 because either he's Mormon or he simply doesn't believe that two men or two women should marry each other... that makes me sad, mostly because I think that novel's very smart, and it seems strange to me that someone who could write something so intelligently would have such a pig-headed and moronic political idea. But at the same time, you know, it's like Mel Gibson. Am I not going to enjoy seeing Lethal Weapon 2 again just because he's a jerk? Probably not. I'll probably still enjoy Lethal Weapon 2.
But
what
that
about
doesn't...
when you see it? I mean, if you see it for free versus you pay for it and you know some residual is going to that guy, because you're enriching that person.
That's a good point.
It's tough to fully separate, to cleave one from the other.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like I love going to Sly Stallone movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a Republican, mm-hmm. unapologetic, you know, right winger. And I think.
Are you psyched that there's going to be a sequel to the what's it called? The old fucking Assassins.
Oh, the Expendables.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I will love to see the Expendables.
Now, are you looking forward to mocking it with your friends?
Well, I get a laugh out of those movies, but we didn't really mock the Expendables. I mean, I thought it was a fun B picture. It wasn't. I mean, it, of course, it's silly and over the top and ludicrous. But
what's the worst movie you've ever seen? And I want to ask you in different categories. What is the movie that's so bad that it works and is enjoyable for mocking? And what movie is so bad yet not bad enough that it goes into mocking territory where it just stays painful?
Well, I'll answer the second one first, because the first movie that springs to mind is a movie called Retarded, about some mentally challenged individuals that are infected with a zombie virus.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie is... I watched it because a title like Retarded is very attractive to someone who likes bad movies. And I have seen some really offensive films, but not on the level of incompetence that this movie is. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't understand the simple rules of filmmaking, the 180-degree rule, mm-hmm. and how to properly light something. And,
I still don't get how to cross the line or not cross the
but
line.
But Retarded was also, you know, once you get over... is that something you need to get? Is that a phone call you need to get?
No, it's probably like... you know, my child's hurt at school or my wife's in the hospital. It's okay.
All right. How long are your interviews usually?
I think we might have even run over here. I'm not paying attention. What's it say on my sheet of paper?
Currently, according to your producers, your running time is hour and 11 minutes at this
point. Usually these only run an hour.
Yeah.
I haven't been paying attention.
Yeah. But to answer your other question,
a
movie that's so bad it's awesome is, well, as I mentioned before, Ice Pirates is a great example.
Mm-hmm.
That movie's so bad it's awesome. Chud is another one of my favorite terrible movies that's so much fun to watch. But Retarded was no fun to watch, because after you get past the offensiveness of its both title and concept... Mm-hmm. Then the movie, it just becomes dull. So the offensiveness is actually the fun part, because they're willing to be that politically incorrect, but the movie's just painfully dull.
So what offends you the most is poor filmmaking, a lack of respect for the art, the craft of
actually
filmmaking.
What offends me the most is movies where it's clear that everybody involved is phoning it in and cashing a paycheck. I'd rather watch something that's completely incompetent but has a lot of heart than watch
like
something...
Like Father and the Bride 2.
No, I don't think that movie was incompetent, and I don't think it had a lot of heart, okay? It was supposed to have a lot of heart, but it was crap.
All right, well, I think it's time to wrap this up. Let's have a closing poem from you.
Closing poem. Bushki Bayo? Is that how you say that?
I've never read it. I don't know.
Bushki Bayo. Bayo on the bayou. Go to sleep, my darling baby. Bushki Bayo. See, the moon is shining on you. Bushki Bayo. I will tell you many stories if you close your eyes. Go to sleep, my darling baby. Bushki Bayo. Am I saying that right?
I don't care. This is Evan Arnold for the Toncast. We've had as our guest today Todd Robert Anderson, who loves everybody, hates nobody, is waiting to become political until he's finally near dead. And thinks his son will operate with free will. Thank you, Todd Robert Anderson. I hope you're as happy as you pretend to be.
Thanks.
50%. What a great goal.